This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. In particular, this month is being sponsored by Lindsay Marie Tribbett, UFO Weekly News, Eric Hervin, and Nick Martin. I thank you all so very much. And if you want to become a patron, you can do so at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And tonight I'm talking with Mr. Jeff Ritzman. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, sir. How are you?
And we're going to talk about Lodge 49, because I know this is pretty much your favorite show. And I like a lot. I don't know if it's my favorite show, but it's definitely up there. And initially, I wasn't interested in this. Like, I saw the ads and I went, I don't know. And then I saw, I think, you and Michael Hughes going on about how much you guys loved it. And I went, okay, if both of them love this, I must have to watch this. So about halfway through the first season, I went back and started watching it. And it's on AMC. Mm-hmm. And
10 o'clock on Mondays.
Okay. And it's about halfway through the second season now.
Somewhere around there. Yeah.
Yeah. Like fourth or fifth episode, I think.
Yeah. So, fifth. It just aired this week. Yeah.
Okay. So tell people a little bit about it. What is it?
Well, I mean, it starts out, I mean, like you said, you watch the commercials for it, and it kind of looks like this quirky little show that kind of surrounds this Masonic-type lodge situation, and then you start watching it, and you realize, oh, no, it's so much more than that, yes. Which is kind of what grabbed me. I mean, initially, I watched it, and I'm like, this is really good, and then the more you watch, the more you're like, wait a minute. Something legitimately weird is weaving its way through this story. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, just to give everybody kind of like this primer thing, like here's a pair of twins, Liz and Sean Dudley, and Sean goes by the name Dud. And these are both two people that are, like, to look at it through the lens of trickster theory, they are extremely marginal people. And they're both in liminal states of sorts because their father has died. He owned a pool company where they sold pool cleaning supplies and chlorine and all that sort of thing, local business. And he was killed while body surfing, but they never found his body. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like, that was kind of the first thing that made my ears perk up was like, okay, so he's, you know, it's kind of a Schrodinger type thing where, is he really dead? You're not really sure if he's really dead because they never found the body, but he's not here, so where is he? So there's that sort of thing going on. And the scene opens up in the first episode with Sean out on the beach metal detecting, and he finds a ring, and it's a ring from the lodge, the Lynx Lodge, they call it. And the Lynx Lodge is kind of like, on first blush, you think this is like everybody probably remembers the Mooses and the, you know, the Masons, of course, and mm-hmm. all those sorts of clubs. And it kind of seems like that sort of thing, which mainly it kind of revolves around the bar, right? The bar that's in the lodge hall. And you think, well, it's just a drinking club is what it boils down to. But then you kind of start getting this history about this Harwood Fritz Merrill, who was born in like 1833, and there's a whole story that goes along with him, where he became interested in Egyptian mysticism and, you know, Hellenistic Egypt, where the city of Alexandria was the center of alchemical knowledge and all that sort of stuff, and esoteric pursuits of one kind or another. And so this guy basically starts the lodge, and it's a lot more involved in the story than that, but I don't want to ruin it for people who want to watch. Yeah. And so there's this undercurrent of, there's an alchemical component to this stuff, a mystical component to the lodge. And then there's all of the ways that things seem to happen in this are very, like, you know that there's something more to it even when you're watching it, right? So Sean finds the ring and he goes to a pawn shop because he's broke. He has no job, right? And he takes the ring to the pawn shop, and the pawn shop guy says, it's not worth anything, it's base metal, and that's a lodge ring. That's, there's people, the Lynx Lodge, they're over on such and such road. And he goes, oh, okay, so you won't give me any money? He said, no. So he pawns his metal detector for cash. And, you know, and so he, you know, he's out of work, and Liz, his sister, is working in a place called Shamrocks. So there's a symbol with higher esoteric connotations at the Shamrock, right? So that's where she works, and it's basically, you know, it's all about boobs and miniskirts. And
it's sort of a Hooters.
It's a job. It's not a career. But it's, again, it's that liminal position. This is not a career job. It's a job you get to pay bills to get through college or to whatever. And so there's that added, that sexual component of that's kind of taboo. Like, you know, there's all these girls with short skirts on walking around serving beer in low cut tops and all this kind of stuff. So it's very much that kind of, I don't know, it's that, it's that perfect place for, seeing the marginal aspects of her existence in the story. It just puts her right into that slot. You know it immediately. But she's also like a self-sabotaging character where she does get these breaks for more money and more responsibility and really a career. And she just abandons it. You know, like she just can't seem to follow through on these things. And she said, you know, when I played Chutes and Ladders as a kid, I always like going down the chute, you know, which is how you lose. And so there's that. So she's in that period of, like, is stuck in that transitional phase. She doesn't know what to do with her life, and she's just kind of languishing. Like Dud, they're both kind of these liminal, very marginal characters. And so Dud meets Ernie, and Ernie is at the lodge. Ernie is a knight at the lodge, and what struck me immediately was that you find out that Ernie is a plumbing salesman. He sells plumbing supplies. And I turned off the TV that night. I'm like, you know, they could have made him anything in this story, but instead he's a plumbing guy. And with all of the paranormal / esoteric things going on in the story, you just can't help but to think, you know, of ghost hunters and, you know, and the connection with plumbing.
Yeah.
You know, like that just really, I went, really? They could have written this man as anything. And Brent Jennings plays him. He's a fantastic actor. And, you know, but Ernie is also, he's a road, he says it literally in the show, I'm a road man, like I'm a road salesman. And so that right there is a liminal space. He is a liminal, in that liminal space all the time as part of his job. And so we also know that road salesmen are border crossers, which is another trickster aspect. They are both literally and figuratively, as he's also having an affair with a married woman, right? So, who is white, and Ernie is a African-American man. And so there's that kind of, I mean, even though we do live in a more enlightened age these days, certain things are always going to seem, whether they are taboo or not, they're always going to kind of carry that edge, I guess is the best way to put that. You know, we're not living in a time right now where, well, I mean, I don't know, we've kind of backstepped a little bit, but we're not in a spot where homosexuality or interracial marriages or relationships are all that, like, we don't, we're not aghast like people were in the 40s and 50s and earlier. But it still carries that odd tinge of taboo, right? So, not to most of us, but in societal terms in general, I think that's still unfortunately a thing. And so that too is a, is kind of a trickster theorem thread that gets in there. And Ernie, incidentally, is plagued by ravens in the beginning mm-hmm. of the show. And so ravens are associated with Apollo, and that's the god of prophecy, and they're said to be a symbol of bad luck, and you know, they were God's messengers in the mortal world, and et cetera, and so on. So there's that. And Ernie starts out in the show with a gambling debt because work is not providing him enough income. So there's that stress, right? So you've got all these things in the three, I would say the three main characters. Everybody's in the same in the same space. And the more I watch, the more I'm going, good Lord, whoever's writing this has to know. They have to know. You find out that Jim Gavin, the creator, who's a brilliant writer and conceptualist of all these things, I just recently found out, is actually into some of this weird stuff. And he said to a person on Twitter the other day that he does, in fact, follow this stuff and tries to be as accurate as possible with, you know, what he writes and how he figures the story. But I still have to wonder, like, did you write all these people in this marginal space because you know about trickster theorem and you know this is how these things kind of roll? Because in the course of the show, there are visions, you know, that people are having visions in this little group of people. I mean, there's Dud has had visions, other characters in the story, they've all had these mystical experiences
mm-hmm.
And everybody seems to be in that space where it's ripe for paranormal eruptions to happen. I mean, you've got Blaze, who is a member of the Lodge, and Dud meets him upon getting in. And Blaze is an apothecary owner, which is really just a fancy pot shop, right? So, but this guy is a character that is steeped in mysticism and marginality as well. And his head is always very much in the spiritual prophetic cloud, like all the time. And as far as I am concerned, viewing eyes for this, I'm seeing him as the part of the shaman of the story, like mm-hmm. he's the guy mm-hmm. that helps in the beginning. He helps Ernie cure his cat's issue with a host of all these oils and herbs, and but there's other things about his personality in that he seems to be sexually fluid, which is like another kind of the shamanic type thing going on there, because later on in, I think it's season one, he sleeps with a man, but you're not sure whether he's gay because it's not really stated that he is, but you're left in that story-wise point where is he or isn't he? And you know, as you watch the story, you realize, well, it's just part of his nature. He just is a fluid guy. But he is the one who takes on what they call the magnum opus Eve's success with. And he's very much that shamanic figure in the story. And then there's Connie and Scott. And Connie is a reporter. These are both Lodge members as well. She's a writer, reporter. And in the beginning of season one, she pretty much loses her job, I'd say about halfway through the season or a couple episodes in.
Right.
She loses her job, and she is unbelievably liminal and marginal because online media has taken over her job and made her obsolete, right? So,
right.
But there's also the added feature that she's terminal with some kind of quote-unquote brain cloud, right? So we're thinking it's either brain cancer or a tumor or something like that. So she stands on this threshold that actually, I mean, it's amazing that this thing dances so closely with trickster theorem and the way things are written so play into this that you see them every chance that you see them. Every time you turn around, there's something else.
Mm-hmm.
That you almost wonder, could someone actually write this? I mean, that's what I've wondered. Like, is this just happening, or is this being written so deftly? And I don't doubt Jim's, you know, his abilities, because he's an amazing writer. But, oh my God, it's so much. Like, it's so much. And, you know, she is stated directly in these words that she is in a threshold event. You know, she's on the threshold of the hereafter, but also in season two, she's on the threshold of better and understanding of the lodge and the history and the mystical connections.
Mm-hmm.
And this most recent episode that aired this past Monday, she has a vision that is pretty astounding. And again, I'm not going to ruin that for everybody, but then you've got Orbis, which is like what do you compare this to? It's like, it's an aerospace firm that's based in Long Beach, which is where this whole story unfolds. And Orbis is closing down, right? So people are losing their jobs. So the whole town is in this liminal, chaotic state because people don't know what they're going to do for a living. And just about every, like, if you live in Long Beach, chances are you know someone who's worked at Orbis, or your parents worked there, or your grandparents, or, you know, it's just that kind of place, and it's closing down. And there are some very interesting things that go on there throughout the story that are very weird. So,
including Bruce Campbell being a part of that.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, there's a land development, which, again, construction, change, right? So all of these themes and these sub-themes are just pulsing through this entire story. It's extraordinary. I mean, I watched this past Monday and I said, you know what? I've had enough. I've got to record something because people know just how amazing that this show is for what it's able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not being written this way, if a lot of these very subtle things aren't actually being written and they're just coming out, then that's really incredible as well. Right? So I would assume that it's probably all being written this way, but it feels so accidental. I mean, and that's probably the brilliance of Jim's writing.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably just that amazing writing style. But, you know, they go, of all places, they go to a psychic. They end up at a psychic's place this week. And the psychic, I mean, in watching him talk and watching him behave, he clearly admits to Liz that he's not a psychic.
Mm-hmm. That was great.
But he knows things, and he hangs at the track, and he plays the horses, right? Because he knows the jockeys, and he knows the trainers, and he's got an insight. He's not psychic. He's just an astute guy that's trying to make his way in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's very observant and all of these things. But at the end, when she's getting ready to walk out of his apartment, he lays, you know, the psychic thing down on her. And you can clearly tell that this is not coming from being a con man or a quick talker. This is coming from a place of he's legitimately psychic. And you're like, oh, come on. come on. The guy is a con man. He's deceptive. He's slick, but he's also psychic. And that's also a very, you know, again, these things erupt from people. I mean, what did they find out in some of these psychical experiments is that when there's the element of deception is accounted for with a subject, that more odd things seem to happen. So there, that component adds to the reality of Psy. So I think that's amazing writing if that was actually something that was found out and that put into play. But I mean, my God, I saw that and I'm like, yeah, I'm done. I gotta like write something or do something. And, you know, I don't know. It's extraordinary to watch this story, and the story is good too. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not just, I don't just watch it because I go, oh, that's Trickster. It's a great story, and mm-hmm. it's hysterical. I mean, it's funny as you can't believe, but
It's quirky, it's weird. Even if you don't get all that type of the stuff you've been talking about, the esoteric type of stuff, it's still fun to watch.
Absolutely. And
I mean the stuff that happens with them is just ridiculous.
I mean and everywhere you look, like you can look at certain characters and go, for the first time, being into this subject actually gives me insight into a television show, right? That isn't Ancient Aliens or something, or Ghost Hunters or whatever. I literally said like 2 or 3 weeks ago, Connie is going to become a very important figure in this whole thing. And sure enough, I mean, she's, you know, she has taken a step into kind of being above the lodge. I mean, kind of like she's now been inducted into this thing called the True Lodge, which we're not even sure what that means yet. But, you know, it obviously comes with some kind of interesting knowledge about things. And and she is actively kind of pursuing a miracle. Mm-hmm. With blindfolding herself, with having lynx eyes, kind of embroidered on the blindfold.
Yeah,
and she walks around like this, and she walked around, and the lady at the lodge in England said, "You'll know when it's time to take it off. You'll see when it's mm-hmm. time to take it off." And she did, and you know, but there's such a host of things that are connected. I mean, it makes Lost look like it's Lost, right? I mean, there were so many, like, Lost was another one that, like, there were all these reflexive sub-themes going on, and you wondered, well, how did this connect to this? And you never really got the answer to these things. The great thing about Lodge 49 is you do get those things. Like, they do resolve themselves, and you understand a little bit more about these strange things that people are seeing when you look at certain paintings on the wall in the lodge, or you look at, I mean, they zoomed in on I think it was last week's, not this past Monday's, but the Monday before, they zoomed in on an etching that's over the fireplace in the library, which is a real artifact from alchemy. Like it's an etching done by a guy named Champagne or Champagne, however you want to say it. And a lot of people think that he was, God, what was the guy's name? I can't remember now. Isn't that terrible?
I do it all the time.
I'm getting really bad with names. The older I get, the worse I get with names. Anyway, this was a guy who, like, back in the day was one of those people that they assumed that he had actually gotten the trick to turning lead into gold, which is the whole thing about. He was the guy who actually made it happen, and made it happen for one of his students as well. But they're thinking that this guy, and I'm looking through my post on Facebook or on Twitter, because I know I posted this, but it's one of those things where the more it makes you want to look into alchemy, right? Start looking at alchemy, you realize that there's a lot of stuff that people don't know about, even the figures that are involved in it, which is really like, that just makes it all the more a marginal pursuit, right? And there's heavy spiritualism in this stuff, and there's but it's also, you know, it's also like chemistry and other stuff. And I never really knew that much about it or cared. I certainly had heard the word before, but I never knew what it meant. And then there's the deeper connotations as to what all that means. Fulcanelli is the guy I'm thinking of. Found the post. So Fulcanelli was this guy that is said to have had, he's said to have transmuted 100 grams of lead into gold using projection powder. they think that he may have been the guy who did the etching over the fireplace. Like, it's signed Champagne, but they always have thought it's really Falconelli that did that, because the interesting thing about this etching is that it is a piece that is related to architectural symbology. And so in the lodge, they find, I think purely by accident, they find a room that has been sealed off that contains this library. And in the middle of this library is this corpse of one of the leaders of the lodge at one point back in the 60s. And he's a very strange figure. He's supposed to be figuring into the next episode a lot more. We really haven't seen anything of him since season one. But there's a whole component of, an affair with a married man, and I mean it's an incredibly detailed show. It's impossible to go over every thing in detail, but that's the general gist, and it's fascinating. And so the more I watch and the more I see, the more I'm like, yeah, all these things really are following like what I've talked about on this show.
Yeah.
I think pretty much every show that I've done here has been that kind of the anti-structural, the liminal, mm-hmm. the marginal. It's all here. And it's fascinating to watch this story unfold and see more of that unfolding all the time until you do get these I don't know, they are like eruptions. Like you just wonder how much marginal can we get with this story? How much more anti-structural could this story be, or can these people get? And then boom, something happens that is of the mystical band. And I'm like, yeah, of course it does. Right? So,
but it's all very subtle too. None of it's blatant.
No, it is very subtle. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It comes across as just being quirky to somebody who doesn't know this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and that's this is what somebody on Facebook had brought up this week was, for people who aren't into this line of thinking, like, does this make sense to them? Like, do they understand the deeper things that are going on underneath here? And is that enough for them to like the show? Will it be engaging to them enough to watch? And clearly it is, because people are watching this year. So I think a lot more than last, I hope. But
I also think this season's been better than last season too, because now they're getting to fill this stuff out a little bit.
Yeah, you're getting more. You're getting the story's getting fleshed out more, and you're finding things out. Like, you're learning, like about the True Lodge. You're learning about
and all the Mexico stuff.
Oh my God! Right? I mean, I'll just put it to you this way, folks. If you don't want to watch the show, I'll give you the word that will absolutely make you tune in. Donkey corn. Like, that's all I'm going to say.
You say donkey corn?
Donkey corn. Yeah. Yeah. It's a unicorn donkey, right?
Yes. So it's a donkey. Yes, it is.
And, or a unidonkey, whatever you want to call it. But yes, there is a donkey corn in there.
That is a beautiful moment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, and just inexplicably weird, right? So yeah, has everything that we have talked about, and with or without me on this show talking about this, I mean, Josh has brought this up, I'm sure. Red Pill's probably brought this up. You know, inexplicably weird things. Like, it's the paranormal is not portrayed on television or in fiction really that well.
No,
in that it is inexplicably far more weirder than the imagination can come up with. And that is literally what Lodge 49 presents, is these things that you're just like, what? What is this? And it's just out of left field. You can't anticipate it. It just feels right. And you're like, holy crap, this guy is really writing a story that is steeped in this stuff. And it's soaked in it. And it shows. So I can't talk enough about it. I love this show.
and you've talked to some of the people who make it on Twitter. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And have they told you anything that is not public as far as that type of stuff goes?
No, I don't really ask. Like I like from the first episode that I saw, I pretty much, I think it was like maybe a week. I was a week behind, I think, last year. And I just, I mean, for me, it was like one of these things where there's not a whole lot when you do art for a living and you go to work and you do that every day, it takes a lot to come home and want to do it. Like, you just don't want to do it. And I'm guessing that probably a lot of people in my profession probably have this problem where, you know, you started doing this thing because you loved it, right? And then it becomes your livelihood. And I don't say that I've grown to hate it, but I have grown to get tired of doing it.
Sure.
In the sense that I don't want to come home and draw, and I don't want to come home and paint, right? And I don't want to come home and do composite work and Photoshop and all that. Like, I just don't, I'm not interested. But when this show came along, it fired something off in me that I started doing a piece of art for every episode. And this is probably the more inexplicable thing to me is that I just can't stop doing them. I'm not getting paid to do them. I'm not, you know, I don't care that I'm not getting paid. I started doing them. I just put them on Twitter and I hashtag Lodge49, and that's how it started. And they just pour out of me. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I don't even feel like I'm coming up with them. And that's when, to me, that's always when the art was really like really cool to do, is when you feel like it's not you doing it, right?
Right.
And yeah. You just kind of waltz into this zone, and all of a sudden, it just starts falling, and you just, it just pours out through you, and so you put it down, and there it is. And they're weird, but I thought, you know, I wonder if I'm going to get to a point where, if I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to post these things, and, is anything going to be predictive about what's going on? So I'm doing these pieces, and they're kind of reflective of the last episode, but they also, I think they kind of burst kind of out of like where I think the story might be going, or one character particularly had a great scene in the last episode. So I'll kind of focus on them, for one reason or another. And in some degrees, that's kind of been a little weird that sort of kind of has happened, not to any huge degree by any stretch, but things that I notice about the show that are happening are interesting. And I don't know, somewhere along the line, the gentleman who plays Scott, Eric Allen Kramer, liked one of the pieces that I put up like very early on. And now it's pretty much like I post a piece up and pretty much the whole cast seems to really like them. So
that's awesome.
Nice, right? That's nice. That's nice to, it's nice to be able to do something that isn't Star Wars, that isn't work, that isn't, you know, somebody else's thing. It's nice to just pour something out of yourself and have people like it. So that's nice. But, you know, the cast, are really nice people, and they super interactive with their fans, and, you know, and everybody that I've interacted with from the cast, they're lovely people. So I enjoy doing it for them. I enjoy doing it for other fans, because other fans now, I mean, are following this stuff. And so they're just fun to do, and I really enjoy it. And I, at this point, I don't think I can stop, because I see them and I'm like, yep, that's got to happen. And now what's really weird is, like little lines are jumping out at me, right? So, on one of the episodes, Dud is in the donut shop, and he has, let's say, selectively borrowed some pool equipment from another company that is occupying his dad's shop, and he hates them, right? So he lifts this pool equipment and he steals it out of the back of their truck, and they come in and they say, "Did you steal this stuff out of the back of the truck?" And he goes, "No, I wouldn't do that." And he said, "Maybe it was the there's gangs around here. They might have done it. Maybe it was the Willow Street Knife Boys." You know, like, he makes this gang up out of thin air, right? And I'm just like, that just struck me. So I'd like did a whole like, you know, I did a whole like colors back patch for the Willow Street Knife Boys, and I posted that, and that was like a big thing. So I put it up on TeePublic, and I started selling shirts of it. Nice. And so I'm taking all the proceeds of that, and all the proceeds from selling that shirt are going to go to St. Jude's.
Beautiful.
So we're going to do that. And so I just sold two more tonight, which is great because I want to at least give $50. You don't make much on these things, but you know, if any listeners are fans and want one, you know, you can go to my Twitter page and see the link for it. But and now I'm doing some work for another interesting little angle on this, because again, it's really inspirational for me, and there's not a whole lot of things that do that. So it's kind of nice to be inspired. It's nice to find something that does that for you.
And it's nice to have deep shows on television. There's a handful out there, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good stuff. I mean, I seriously recommend it. I mean, if you haven't seen it, you can watch it on Hulu. I think the season one is on Hulu. And I think if you have On Demand, I would be reasonably sure it's probably on there. But you can also watch it on AMC TV on their website. They have past episodes, so you can catch up that way too.
Yeah, I started halfway through, and honestly, like I you know, it was like maybe up to season six when I started watching, and so I went back, and I think DirecTV On Demand had all the first episodes up to like the previous week's episode, and it was there, but every time I tried to watch it, it errored on me, and then it would tell me it wasn't available, and I'm going, no. I need to see this one before I can watch the ones I have recorded, you know?
Right.
And I eventually had to get it through other means, which I shouldn't have had to do because it should have played, but it just refused to play. It was there. I couldn't watch it.
Yeah. 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 Lovely technology at times can be a pain. Yeah. but
it is, it is available out there.
Yeah. It's out there. You can catch up and you can see exactly what I'm talking about. And again, you watch this show and you go, wow, this guy is either really, really familiar with not only, you know, the alchemical stuff and the history of alchemy. And if you guys out there listening, if you love little things that show up in shows that you can dig into and try and figure out why they're there, this is it. I mean, this show has all of that. So if you're like one of these people who you love a good mystery image that's shown on a back wall, you can figure out, and Jim has said, everything that they show in these background shots, or, you know, he was talking in an interview about the painting over the fireplace, and he says, nobody's really figured that out yet. And well, so what do you think I did? I went out and like, doggedly hunted this picture down to figure out what it was and post it. But, you know, it's like, yeah, I get kind of where that's coming from. I'm not sure if I hit it directly on the head, but there's all these little, I don't know, these little images of things that you see. Like, there's a scene where Dud is standing in Orbis and he's running from guys who are stealing cable, right? Because Orbis is closing down and there's all this cable everywhere and junk. And so people are in there scavenging it. And he catches them and they chase him. And he crawls in under this piece of plywood and there's a door. And he goes through the door and then he goes into a room through a crack in a wall. And then he goes down a ladder. So it's really deep in the bowels of this place. And he's standing in like water that's probably looks like it's maybe like an inch deep or 2 inches deep. And all of a sudden there's stars coming up from the floor. He's seeing this vision of stars and you see that some of these stars are brighter than others and they are moving. And you go, okay, is this a constellation we should be looking up? Like, it's that kind of stuff that you start digging into to go, okay, what did that mean? And what does that mean? and it makes you go on the net and search these things out and learn about what that means. And then when you find out you're right, that the show does not disappoint you with some, you know, some garbage that's not pertaining to what it, the answer really is. It really is the answer you think that it is.
Right.
So
right.
It validates what you research. Like, it's really sharp in that way. So,
And again, if you don't want to do it, it's still an entertaining show.
Even
It works on two levels, and it's hard for a lot of shows to do that. Every once in a while, you get one that actually works on two levels.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, the acting, we were talking before we started recording tonight, like, the acting is unbelievably good.
Yes.
I mean, and TV shows come and go, and every once in a while you get one like Breaking Bad that was an amazing cast with amazing acting all the time. And this show is exactly that sort of beast. It's just, this cast is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, I did not watch Humans, which the girl that plays Liz, Sonya Cassidy, she was in a show called Humans on Sci-Fi, and I did not watch it, admittedly. And so when I heard her in an interview, speaking with a British accent, I'm like, what is this? Yeah, she's actually British, but her American accent is so perfect, you will never know that this girl is from the UK. And a really pronounced accent, I might add. So, I mean, she's unbelievable in this character. And Eric and Linda, who plays Connie, and all these people, they're just unbelievably good at what they do. And the cast interacts well together. Like, no one is clunky, right? Right down to, like, the people that work at Ernie's plumbing company. Like, even they are great. You know, like, great characters, great character actors, but great storylines and how they all weave together. I guarantee if you watch it, you're going to not be disappointed by it at all.
I would agree with that, so... Lodge 49, in case you missed what we were talking about, it's on AMC?
AMC, Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, right? So,
yeah.
Yep.
And as we said, I'm sure it's on demand and, you know, stuff like that. So go check it out.
Yes, please check it out.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, sir.
I want to give a shout out now to my Patreons, without whom this show may not exist. So I would like to give a special shout out to those pledging $10 or more. Allison Cook, Eric Hervin, Lindsay Murray Trebet, Nick Martin, UFO Weekly News, Super Inframan, Tim, Damian Tallman, Edu Camahort, Janet Bunderson, 36 Dingo, Maria, Nate Syria, Jennifer Campbell, Mike McGuire, American Rambler, Paul Buscini, Kevin, John Rutledge Foster, Eric Citron, Andy McNamara, Sasha Jorg, Matthias Sunby, Christopher Vaughn, Riker and Stark, Sean Cosgrove, Jose A., Roger Gonzalez, Craig Cisternos, Ray Benedetto, Lindsay Jackson K., Alfred Tuttle, Kevin Schreck, Patricia Gaiaquinta, William Lovelace, Mark Brady, Chris Is a Hot Dog a Sandwich, John Eddy, and Carla Mahoney. Thank you all so very much. Your support is invaluable.
Thousands of gallons of ocean froth and foam as it breaks the the surface. Its black eyes find you almost at once. Its black eyes find you almost at once. You can't hide, swim away, or take air into your lungs. Just scream for help that won't come. The door open, call out a warning, and try not to sound panicked. But my hammering heart hears the voices of spirits that tempt us, the scorn that they've spoken. I'll remember the sad, frightened noises of an old friend who dreamt once of storms on the ocean and black eyes looking up from below. And black eyes looking up from below. Black eyes looking up from below. And black eyes looking up from below.
Have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com, and thank you so much for your support.